This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. We begin today with John M. Barry, the author of The Great Influenza, the story of the deadliest pandemic in history, his book about the 1918 pandemic, which killed 675,000 Americans, is the definitive work about what happened a century ago. And John Barry has been called on many times since we visited with him in February about what's happening in our world today. National and international media luminaries have consulted him on what's going on. His latest piece in the New York Times has had more than 1 million people read it. And he, in his latest work, says a comprehensive shutdown may be required in much of the country. Yesterday, the governor of Louisiana, John Bel Edwards, extended phase two restrictions for at least another 3 weeks. The cases in Louisiana are more than 125,000 known people in our state to have contracted COVID-19. And there are more than 4,000 people in our state who have died from this disease. John Barry, good morning to you.
Good morning. Wish we had a more pleasant subject to talk about.
How serious is it?
Well, I think it's serious. Obviously, the case mortality rate is pretty low, but so many people are still being infected with, unfortunately, no end in sight right now. The real concern, one of the real concerns, a lot of people had speculated that the warm weather, summer, would make it much harder for the virus to transmit. And in fact, warm weather does make it harder for the virus to transmit. Nonetheless, we are seeing what we are seeing now. So the real concern is when the weather turns colder, or particularly in more northern parts of the country, people are inside in poorly ventilated spaces, what will happen then?
What will happen next? And as we approach the cooler months, it could get worse. And we're talking about playing college football and professional football. How can we do this?
It's going to be a challenge. Baseball has not been faring so well. We will see how they proceed with their season, such as it is. I don't know if your listeners know, but Jim and I are old buddies, and certainly football is dear to both of our hearts.
And John Barry speaks from the experience of a coach. He was on the sidelines in 1973 when Tulane beat LSU 14-0 on December 1st of that year in old Tulane Stadium. How many were in the stands, John?
86,958, then the largest crowd ever to watch a game in the South.
86,958 to see LSU lose to Tulane for the first time in 25 years.
But you just told everyone how old I am.
Well, we've both been around for a while.
Yeah, obviously, I'm of the age group that is particularly vulnerable. But everyone needs to take this thing seriously. Even people who have no symptoms whatsoever, under X-ray, many, if not most of them, show what's called ground glass opacity in their lungs. We don't know whether that will cause long-term problems. The disease does attack the cardiovascular system. We don't know whether those things will lead to strokes. The disease has neurological impacts. We don't know whether or not those things will be long-term. So even people who have no symptoms at all may not be out of the woods. We discovered all sorts of things with, Zika, for example, after the fact. It's something to be concerned about. There's no question about it, whatever age you are.
Well, right now in the U.S., the Centers for Disease Control has the number at 160,365 Americans who have died from COVID-19. John, in his piece in the New York Times 2.5 weeks ago, wrote, "When you mix science and politics, you get politics. With the coronavirus, the United States has proved politics has not worked. If we are to fully reopen both the economy and schools safely, which can be done, we have to return to science." Are we doing that?
Well, we haven't yet done it at a national level. I think the governor is trying. I think the mayor of New Orleans, where I live, is trying. I think there are so many people who still doubt the seriousness of this disease. You know, that's a real problem. But in sense, to get a sense of what can be done, we all remember what Italy looked like. We all were saying, we hope we never get to look like Italy. Well, now we wish we were like Italy. Italy has fewer than 200 cases a day. That, you know, that's a population of roughly 60 million people. Louisiana is around, what, 5 million, roughly?
Roughly.
And we have, you know, over 1,000 a day. If we had per capita the same number of cases in Italy, you wouldn't have me on the air to talk about it. No one would be debating whether or not schools would be reopening. They'd be open. Every football team in the land would be practicing or about to start practice. There wouldn't be any of the discussion of this. So Italy is not my idea of a, when I think of Italians, that country, that culture, I don't think of a tightly regimented culture where everybody does what, you know, someone in authority suggests. It's a pretty independent, pretty laid-back place.
Mm-hmm.
They have less than 200 cases a day. We have exactly the same tools that Italy has. They use them. We have not.
And they have
the result is their economy is functioning fully. And ours is still in the tank. And we have, you know, tremendous concerns and a high death toll.
877-217-5757 for John Barry. We start with Jason in Jones Creek. Jason, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, guys. I agree with Mr. Barry's analysis of where we could be if we were just a little more, just a good bit more serious about the virus. But to switch the subject momentarily to something else that John has participated in, I remember in the latter years of the Jindal administration, he had testified at the legislature about the coastal erosion lawsuits. And I thought we had been awarded, the state had been awarded a large settlement to help with that. I just wondered, you know, where are we today in how we are protecting our coast? And I just appreciate his analysis also.
All right. John?
Okay, thanks. Well, the lawsuit that I was directly involved in was dismissed. The court said the levy board had no standing. There are multiple other parish lawsuits out there. And the attorneys, the Carmouche Law Firm in Baton Rouge, has worked out a possible settlement with one defendant. And it wasn't a huge amount of money, or at least not compared to the total situation. But it was, you know, it was $100 million, and that was, in the meantime, you know, that's on hold. That required all sorts of things to happen, none of which happened. And, of course, the legislature, or none of which has happened yet, it may still happen. In the meantime, of course, the legislature in its last term tried, in effect, to kill that and kill all the parish lawsuits indirectly. All that came very close to passing, but did fail. So that is still out there, the coastal lawsuits. There are I guess, seven parishes that have sued the industry. And there's a lot of private landowner action, but there's been no resolution of any of them, including the potential settlement.
877-217-5757. We're about to go to a break, but we will spend much of the hour with John Berry, who lives in the New Orleans French Quarter. It's a place that he loves. And right now, as you look out your window, what do you see, John? Is it bustling as usual, or is it pretty much tepid?
No, it's pretty quiet, but, you know, life has returned to it.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk more about the 2020 pandemic when we return with John Berry. COVID-19 has now taken more than 160,000 lives in the United States of America, and it could be with us for a while. We'll talk more with John Berry after this 90-second pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Matt Doyle is producing. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and a special guest indeed, the accomplished writer John Berry, who's written some of the top works in our country regarding different topics. His first book, which has not been saluted as much as some of his others, The Ambition and the Power, A True Story of Washington, 1989, it focused on Jim Wright and Newt Gingrich, and that was when the collision in the U.S. House occurred that continues to this day. And John, before we go back to the phone lines at 877-217-5757, is the political ineptitude that we're seeing right now in our country largely related to what happened with Wright and Gingrich in 1989?
Well, it certainly started there, I guess. Probably started a little bit before that. But the way politicians have gone after each other, that's relatively new. Newt, whom I actually do have a relationship with, and although I haven't talked to him in a couple of years, he was very helpful to Louisiana after Katrina. Much appreciate that. But Newt had a lot to do with the change in the tone of politics. So did Lee Atwater in the 1988 presidential election. The negativity, the demonization of your opponent, the idea that if they don't agree with you, then they are not only corrupt but also evil. That is a real change from the way our politics used to be. Though it's been that way for some time, it keeps getting worse. You keep thinking you've seen the bottom and it'll start bouncing back and returning to better days, but the bottom keeps going down further and further.
Mike in New Iberia. Mike, you're on Talk Louisiana with John Berry.
Yeah, I just have an observation and welcome any feedback. The disease, no matter what state you're in, it's the same disease, but the difference of the impact in each state is driven, I believe, in large part, if not totally, by demographics and culture. Any comment?
What about the state-by-state reaction and response?
We'll have to wait and see as the virus works its way through the country to see how true that is. There certainly are differences country to country. There's absolutely no question about that. Some states have handled it better. You know, New York looked like a disaster, but right now New York looks great. Very few cases a day. States that took it seriously, mostly in the Northeast because they were hit first. People around the country looked at that and thought, well, that'll never happen here, and then it's happening. Georgia and Florida were bragging about their responses in reopening and so forth and so on, thought they had it licked, and same for Texas, was barring Louisiana people. They had to quarantine if you went to Texas. Now look at Texas. Certainly in terms of demographics, that's true. Because the disease kills more elderly people. So if your demographics are such that you've got a lot of more elderly than another state, then you're likely to be hit harder in terms of the death toll, not necessarily in the new cases. I'm not sure if the culture makes much of a difference other than the fact that more densely populated areas or, you know, where more people are in a household, they're going to get hit harder. You know, that's may partly be cultural, but mostly it's a question of money, I think.
Wayne in New Orleans. Wayne, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with John Barry. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning, Mr. Barry. It's a pleasure speaking with you. I thought that Rising Tide, you couldn't do a better book than Rising Tide. And you proved me wrong with The Great Influenza. Do you plan to write another book on The Great Influenza Part 2?
Well, it's funny. I just got an email from my publisher during the break about writing a book on this, what we're going through right now. And I had been working on a book on the coast, but it looks like I am going to put it aside and take this up.
That's great news. James in Metairie. James, hello. You're on Talk Louisiana with the incomparable John Barry. Hi, James.
Hi, Jim. Good morning. Hello, Mr. Barry.
I don't know why incomparable,
Jim. I think part
of
the problem we have with this is a certain segment of the population who are anti-maskers, anti-social distancing. I recently heard an interview with a discredited scientist, so-called scientist. I'm sure you've heard of her. Judy Mikovits. She is, you know, this woman has good credentials, but she's had some serious problems along the path of her her career. But, you know, this is a woman with eye-watering credentials, but she's claiming that I'm looking at a New York Post article. The pandemic was created to make profits off vaccines. Masks can make people sicker, and that sheltering in place harms the immune system. So people who tune in to this right-wing radical news media, they say, well, Dr. Mikovits says she's a world-renowned virologist. She says the masks are bad, the sheltering in place is bad, and these people use that as a substance to just not use common-sense measures to stop this pandemic. Your comments on people such as Dr. Mikovits.
All right. John Barry.
I guess she's making some money. The stuff is ridiculous. Do people really believe that Tony Fauci, created the virus? Or that Bill Gates is behind the whole thing? I mean, come on. I remember the Comet ping pong stuff during the Trump-Clinton campaign, where supposedly there was this child sex ring operated out of this pizza place. Well, I know that pizza place on Connecticut Avenue. It's right next door to Politics and Prose, a bookstore that is, one of the leading independent bookstores in the United States, where mm-hmm. I've been on book tour and C-SPAN's televised some talks. I had pizza in Comet Ping Pong. They don't even have a basement there. There is no basement. Some people are dumb enough to believe anything. That's all I can say. Masks are a little bit tricky. Early in this pandemic, I actually was, like many other people, most other people, I guess, recommending that the public not wear masks. But that was based on data from 1918. Mm. When they knew in 1918 that if you put on a mask on somebody who was ill, you protected people around them. They ran very good experiments. They could tell you exactly how far droplets would travel and so forth and so on. And they knew masking a sick person protected the healthy. But trying to get the public at large to wear masks, and a lot of cities tried it. It didn't pan out.
All right.
All the studies after the pandemic concluded that widespread use didn't make sense. But this is a different virus. And when the real difference is that if you have no symptoms, you could get infected with the influenza virus and have no symptoms at all because the immune system handles it. You can't spread the disease. And you can spread it shortly before you develop symptoms and get sick, pre-symptomatic transmission, but that's a few hours. This disease is different. This disease you can spread without any symptoms or before you get symptoms. And that extends over a period of days. So when the data came in, my position changed because the information changed and the evidence changed. And now I am a firm believer in masks and don't go out without one.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. We still have some time left with John Berry, the remarkable writer, who 14 years ago gave us the great influenza, the story of the deadliest pandemic in history. We'll talk with him and go to the phones when we return after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana. If you'd like to chime in, 877-217-5757 or talk at talklouisiana.org. Another segment with John Berry, the author of The Great Influenza. In 1918, 102 years ago, almost 700,000 Americans died of a flu called the Spanish flu that was the most deadly pandemic in world history. Now, we know today 160,000 Americans have died. The country is three times larger, but it appears that this will be with us for a while. We have some questions online. This one is from Tom on Bluebonnet about the prospect of a vaccine. Is that a realistic hope that we have, that a vaccine will be the panacea for this, John Berry?
Well, it's very realistic that we'll have a vaccine. I'm not certain it'll be a panacea. There has not yet been a single piece of bad news on vaccines. There are multiple different platforms that are being pursued. So far, every one of them seems to have very positive results. The problem is how effective they will be, how long-lasting the immunity will be, and very importantly, how many people won't take the virus, the vaccine. That seems to be a problem. You have also problems in terms of the distribution, supply chain, things like glass vials, needles, you know, things that, you know, seem so trivial, and yet you can't distribute hundreds of millions of doses, billions worldwide, without these things. And they are likely to be a big problem. So when we will get it is another issue. I think the earliest would be early next year. And even then, how many doses we would get, that remains unknown.
Barbara on Valley Creek asks about the hypothesis that COVID-19 arrived in New Orleans with a tourist or tourists at Mardi Gras. Is that the likely source?
It's certainly very possible. I mean, you know, it's likely, but, you know, not so likely that it couldn't have come earlier. You know, obviously this is the world city, and not just for Mardi Gras, but all of, I think, you know, it wasn't just Mardi Gras weekend. It's probably around before that. That doesn't mean it wasn't Mardi Gras related, but it doesn't really matter.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on Talk Louisiana with John Berry.
Good morning, Mr. Berry, and thank you for your activism and your wisdom and your good writing. I don't know if people realize, but William Barr has used this playbook to save a president before. He obstructed the investigation of the first George Bush, and then Mr. Bush ended up pardoning people who would have testified against him. I think it's been obscene what's been going on. Thanks.
All right. Well, that's not related to the pandemic, but Bill Barr is a force of nature himself, and I think it's fairly apparent that President Trump, John, found his Roy Cohn.
He did find his Roy Cohn. Incidentally, I was invited to apply for a job with the first George Bush when he was vice president. I did apply. I didn't get the job. It was a pretty good job.
Would it have been in the Justice Department?
No, I said George Bush, the first.
I know.
No, not in Justice. It was
because, remember, Barr
working
was his...
directly, would have been working directly under George H.W. Bush.
Under the guy.
Reported, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You're an Ivy Leaguer, as was the first and second George Bush. You went to Brown. They went to Yale. But and you're from Providence, Rhode Island, the hometown of Brown University. How did you end up in New Orleans? Was it the Tulane gig?
No, I actually came down to Mardi Gras when I was in college and thought I'd like the city better without Mardi Gras, so I came back.
And you've been there for most of the time ever since. That's wonderful.
Right.
877-217-5757. Jim in Denham Springs. Jim, you're on with John Barry.
Hi, gentlemen. A couple of quick points. The first one is that I don't think we're going to be able to make this work in this country until at a federal level that masking becomes mandatory with consequences. And same thing with the vaccinations. We just have too many people that have bought in to the QAnon conspiracy theories. And speaking of that, Jim, you've got to fight back when people, you've got guests on that start spouting QAnon conspiracy theories. You just, please, you got to shut them down because that's just making people sick and dead.
All right. I don't know of anybody late who's done that, but I'll keep that in mind. Now, Louie Gohmert, the congressman from Texas, who has...
Let me interrupt for a second.
Go ahead.
You're... Listeners probably know, you know, six states have gotten together, including Louisiana, three Republican governors, three Democratic governors, to arrange for all sorts of things jointly, things that should have been done at the federal level. But there is cooperation among states now, jointly forming sort of a large bargaining unit for, in this case, testing, but that could mm-hmm. expand to other areas. Similarly, in the Northeast, several states had gotten together to make sure that they acted jointly on issues. So hopefully, you know, it's clear the federal government's not going to do what, in my view, is the federal responsibility. You know, Trump said that he's a backup, but I always believed the leadership was being in front, not being behind. But in the absence of the federal government, the fact that states are banding together, that increases their bargaining power. It means they're not bidding against each other. You know, that's a good development.
All right. Matt, before we go back to the callers, let's hear from Congressman Gohmert, who has COVID-19 and his belief that he got it by wearing a mask.
I can't help but think that if I hadn't been wearing a mask so much in the last 10 days or so, I really wonder if I would have gotten it. But I know, you know, moving the mask around, getting just right, I'm bound to put some virus on the mask that I sucked in. That's most likely what happened.
And to think that man is a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. Leslie in Hickory Ridge. Leslie, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Thank you for your show. I just wanted to thank Mr. Barry for his wonderful book. I just finished it a couple weeks ago on Audible, and I recommend everyone buy his book about the earlier pandemic. It was so fascinating to understand, and it helps you to comprehend what is happening right now. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leslie. Do we have more resources? It would seem we do, but we're also fighting a world war in 1918, but what about the prospect of the same number of people or more dying from the current pandemic than died in the year of 1918. What do you think about long-term how this will play out?
Well, first, let me thank the caller. Second, you know, this virus is nowhere near as lethal as the 1918 virus, thankfully. It's bad enough. The 1918 virus worldwide killed 50 to 100 million people. That would be equivalent to 220 to 440 million people today. The most dire, the most worst-case scenarios that anybody has ever presented are fractions of that, although worldwide it could still exceed tens of millions. The worst-case projection for the United States was a little over 2 million. And, you know, nobody has, and, you know, I don't think we're headed into that kind of territory. Fortunately, we have dampened the virus. We haven't done what Italy, Germany, France, Spain. Spain had no deaths yesterday, zero in the entire country.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on with John Barry.
Hey, Mr. Barry. Regarding the first matter that Jim mentioned, do you recall that our LSU friends had distributed doubloons celebrating what was supposed to be the 25th anniversary, not losing a Tulane since 1948 with Eddie Price?
All right, that's Dan, who's a Tulanian. He's thumping his chest all these years later, 47 of them over that victory in Tulane Stadium. It was a big win, and LSU thought it would win again. They had a good team that year, but didn't happen. And, John, you helped the Greenies in the streak.
I didn't have much of a role in that one, but a very small, very, very small role.
You've been a workout guy for many years. Are you continuing to do that in this pandemic?
Yeah, I still work out. I do go to the gym once a week for one exercise. I do squats. I go to the New Orleans Athletic Club. They have very high windows, high ceiling. I got them to open the windows. Ventilation is something that is very under-recognized. Ventilation is very important. And anyway, I do squats there and everything else I do at home with some dumbbells.
All right, and we're pleased to hear that John will be writing a book about the current pandemic, following up on his 2006 Opus, The Great Influenza. Thank you, John Barry, as always. I hope we talk again soon, and we'll return with another accomplished writer, Fiona Davis, after this timeout.